This is the Wrestling Pulsecast. Please call 818-532-9786 with any questions or comments for your host throughout the show.
This is the Wrestling Pulsecast. I am your host, Matt Harris, joined by a crew of people here tonight,
including, but not only, the wrestling wife, Colleen Harris.
My
co-host, Justin Sterwanka. And our other co-host, Cam Daughtry. How is everybody doing today?
I'm doing pretty well over here. Got like another foot of snow over the last 3 days, so I'm glad this can finally sit inside and talk some wrestling tonight.
You forgot to mention you got a crazy new head coach too, Justin.
Yes, we have a crazy new head coach, but better than our old head coach.
I wouldn't go that far.
How is a foot of snow, like a foot of snow, even register on the Buffalo meter? Like, I mean, that has to be just like a dusting for up there.
Oh, yeah, for the most part, but when you have to go outside, and when it comes in like 2 hour packs and you have to go outside 3 different times to shovel, it just sucks.
Understandable. That's why you shouldn't have a shovel and you should have a snowplow.
Well, I have a snowplow, but it wasn't enough to. In the amounts it would come in, it wasn't enough for me to justify bringing out the snowplow. It just kind of piled up over time. I used the snowplow, I think, Saturday morning to get the end of my driveway where the plow left all of his snow. But other than that, it wasn't enough to warrant a plow at one time.
See, when you get older and you have back neck problems, everything justifies a snowplow. I went out there today when it was just freezing rain and there was just sleet and slush all in my driveway and used a snowplow just to get it off the driveway. So, yeah, that's why I don't see where you're coming from, Justin. Sorry.
Okay. And of course, there's no idea what we're talking about snow here.
Yeah, exactly. He's lucky if it rains every now and then. Besides weather-related topics, something just broke right before we went on the air as well, and that's WWE announcing that Randy Macho-Man Savage is going to be the first inductee in the 2015 Hall of Fame. Now, this is interesting. It felt like this was going to happen after they released the Macho-Man DVD, that there's a review up on our site at htcwrestling.com. It seemed the way that they had put together the DVD, how they spoke about him in the DVD, everything of that nature, and also Vince's, what Vince said on the Steve Austin podcast of he's going to be in, just don't know when. It kind of seemed like it was inevitable. The fact that it came so soon, I think is a little surprising, but it's a big move. It's a big move for WWE. It's a big move in mending a lot of relationships and a lot of trust issues that maybe fans have or anger that fans have that Macho Man was not in the Hall of Fame. How do you guys feel that this news has gone over? Is this a publicity ploy by the WWE, or do you think they truly feel that this is the right year to induct him, Justin?
Well, I think the reason that it was announced so soon is because I believe I read today that tickets for the Hall of Fame go on sale either tomorrow or later on today.
They go on sale Saturday, I believe.
Oh, on Saturday. Well, so I guess that's kind of the point where they want to, you know, ramp up ticket sales. Not that the WWE normally has a problem selling out Hall of Fame tickets. I know the last two WrestleManias I've gone to where I try to get Hall of Fame tickets, you have to be online pretty much with a pre-sale passport or right when they go on sale to the general public. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to get those. Those are very hard to find as far as getting to WrestleMania goes, or just as tough as like getting tickets to the Raw after WrestleMania. I think as far as the timing goes, I think they probably were looking at, there's only, at least to me, for the next couple of years, there's only really a handful of big names that you're going to want to headline your Hall of Fame classes. You got your Macho Man, you have Sting, you have The Rock, and The Undertaker at some point. But The Undertaker and Sting are both wrestling this year. I don't think they were going to go in. And I'm sure they thought about The Rock and maybe looked at it as he might have another couple matches left in him. So I think that kind of maybe as a process of elimination came down to Randy Savage, and he was the guy that was picked to be the headline guy this year. Obviously, as wrestling fans, we know this is something that's been long overdue as far as Macho Man being in the Hall of Fame goes. I mean, the guy is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. He's got one of the best bodies of work. Any wrestler, you throw him up against any wrestlers from any heyday, match qualities. I mean, promos are a little crazy, but they're coherent and not Ultimate Warrior-like crazy as far as not making any sense. The guy is kind of a recognizable name to people outside of the wrestling business. Obviously, partnering with Slim Jim helped him out and helped him make a name for people that don't really watch wrestling. So he's a guy that people know about. So obviously he's somebody that should be in the Hall of Fame. I think timing-wise, it's kind of, like I said, just right with the DVD coming out and everything kind of, you know, him getting a little bit more attention as far as the WWE goes. It's just a big, I think, sad regret that we're not going to be able to get a really awesome Macho Man acceptance speech, because I just know that Macho Man acceptance speech for the Hall of Fame would just have been all-time classic Hall of Fame speech and probably would have been up there as one of the best ever.
Yeah, instead we'll probably get a poem from Lanny. Colleen, I wanted to get your take on it. I know more of a casual wrestling fan, but obviously knew Macho Man growing up and have seen more of his stuff since living with me and putting up with my pro wrestling obsession. But what do you think of this edition? And you watched the DVD as well. Is this something that WWE planned on doing, or was it just something kind of last minute they decided since nobody's really watching the product, this is a good PR move?
Well, everything that they do is a PR move. I mean, it's a company that revolves around, you know, their name and what they do. That's the reason marketing's so big for them. I think as far as the timing goes, I seem to recall there was a lot of, you know, anger about him not being inducted sooner, particularly within amongst the wrestlers. Like, I remember you interviewing Jake the Snake Roberts and him saying something about it, too, how there are other people who should be inducted before him. So I think that they tried to probably get him in before, but wasn't there an issue with the brother saying he wanted to be inducted with him? Something along those lines. So if they managed to work that out, it wouldn't surprise me if they jumped it right onto getting him in there, because people wanted to see him in there. It is a PR move. They want to sell products. But at the same time, you know, they put that DVD out because they knew they were going to induct him. I mean, they worked out a whole plan. You know, that brother was never going to talk to that company unless he was ready to make a deal with them and he needed money. So...
yeah, you bring up a good point. There hasn't been really any mention about Lanny's role and the fact that over the last couple of years, he and Randy even said it too, that he didn't want to be inducted in the Hall of Fame unless his brother was in it too. That I don't know if that's going to be the case. Right now, obviously, it's not. But Savage is also the first one announced. So maybe further down you see the genius is being inducted in the Hall of Fame, which would be completely strange. But there is Drew Carey in it and other random people who should not be close to Hall of Fame worthy. But Cam, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like your wife said, I think they knew they were going to put in the Hall of Fame before they put the DVD out, before they even started producing it and making merch. They're a company, they need to try to make as much money as possible. And like Justin said, they're running out of big names. I mean, once they start inducting people of the modern era into the Hall of Fame, they're going to have a problem because they're going to run out of superstars in 10 or 12 years. They're going to start, I can't remember one of the names I saw earlier today rumored to go in, but it was, you know, they're basically getting to where they're going to have to go to guys that, hey, yeah, this guy was in the WWE like in the mid-80s, so we're going to put him in the Hall of Fame as one of the sixth or seventh members. Yeah, there we go. So I think Macho Man's one of the last few legends, I guess, of like the 80s, 70s, 90s that still hasn't, that needs to go in. I guess he's a good Hall of Fame, but I think they're going to do the NWO and things of that nature before they try to get to The Rock and Mick Foley and things of that nature.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if The Rock went in before that, simply because Steve Austin's in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, The Rock is at Steve Austin's level in the wrestling world, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him in there before they go with somebody like John Cena or Kurt Angle or thrown in Triple H, guys like that. Moving on from there a little bit, going back to Raw last week, we had a lot of expectations as far as what was going to happen with the Authority's first night on Back to Raw, and I don't know about you guys, but it kind of just made a left turn for me. A lot of things went down that I did not expect. I don't think a lot of other people expected me either. I think maybe the firing of Ziggler, Rowan, and Ryback was pretty obvious. But things like adding Seth Rollins to the main event at Royal Rumble. This was, I mean, Brock Lesnar versus John Cena at the Rumble had been written out in pen for a long time. So much so that they released a Royal Rumble poster with them on there and stating that it was the final chapter between Lesnar and Cena. So they've been working hard for that match and had it down, had plans arranged, and now kind of all got a wrench thrown in the middle of it with Seth Rollins being added to it. Does this mean that they're moving away from their original WrestleMania plan? Does it mean that they just want to spice it up a little bit because they thought people were going to be bored by Lesnar Cena again? Or it doesn't mean absolutely nothing. And they just wanted people to question who the winner was going to be instead of automatically thinking that it was going to be Brock Lesnar. I don't know how I feel about it. Justin, I mean, I like the fact that it's a triple threat match because I'm one of those people who is going to be bored by the fact that it was less than Cena again. But what do you think as far as that moving forward and how it pertains to the road to WrestleMania?
Well, we talked about last week, one of the things that could be on the table for something like WrestleMania was the idea that Seth Rollins could cash in and go into WrestleMania as champion if they really wanted to go the route of having two guys who are around full-time being in the main event rather than Brock Lesnar being the champion and then leaving the next night if he's going to go re-sign with UFC or some other MMA promotion and just not come back to the WWE. So that was talked about last week, but I think adding him to the triple threat match was kind of, like you said, it threw me off too because I was fully expecting a scenario where either, you know, if John Cena were to win and then Lesnar would beat him up afterward and then Rollins would come out and cash in. I don't know how this is going to play out going forward. Maybe they just didn't want Seth Rollins in the Royal Rumble and they didn't want to have him lose there. But I could see a scenario, I guess, going forward now, even when you add up to what I just talked about, where Cena would pin Rollins going into or at Royal Rumble, and then Lesnar would just get so pissed off that he wasn't pinned to lose his title that he would beat the crap out of Cena. Rollins would come to cash in and then become champion. So this kind of doesn't really change any of those different scenarios, I think, that we talked about last week. I still don't know what the plan is going into WrestleMania. It's not very obvious. I mean, if you believe what was reported last week with Triple H holding a talent meeting at Raw saying they haven't decided who's going to win the Royal Rumble yet, and this is the time for the talents to prove that they want it and they want to be chosen as the next top star in the WWE, it may show that they don't know, even know who's going to win the Royal Rumble yet. So I think at this point, everything is still kind of touch and go for the WWE. And honestly, with the way they've been booked over the last couple of years, I could easily see that being the case where they have no idea even what they want to do going forward. Maybe they're hoping Roman Reigns picks up some more momentum and fans start to get behind him more and they don't gravitate toward Daniel Bryan like a lot of us expect that are going to happen. But I don't see that playing out, especially with the way Reigns has been delivering his promos and his work since he's come back. It just hasn't been up to the even par, I think, of somebody who should be ready to main event WrestleMania. So I think, honestly, that adding Rollins doesn't change the fact that I just don't think they even know themselves what they have going forward into the Royal Rumble and then WrestleMania after that.
Well, I'm going to defend Reigns a little bit here. I think it's pretty obvious that what's been reported online is true, in that Roman Reigns' promos and the way he delivers his promos and how he's being coached to be a main event star is all directly coming from Vince McMahon. It's very 80s. It's very over-the-top, top-level or Hulk Hogan-sized babyface for Roman Reigns. I think that's safe to say. As far as in-ring work goes, look who he's been wrestling. I mean, he wrestled Big Show. Who else did he wrestle? He has quick squash matches over, like, Seth Rollins. He had a long one against Seth Rollins, which I thought was pretty good. But before his injury, he was feuding with Randy Orton. He was in a four-way with Randy Orton, John Cena, and Big Show, I want to say, or somebody. And, I mean, his match with Randy Orton at SummerSlam was fantastic. It showed that he can have a very good singles match. So I think part of the problem for him is that he's not in the ring with ring generals like he was. He was wrestling main event talent. He was trying to push to the top of the tier. And whether they were carrying him or not, he was putting forth a better effort than he is now. Now it seems like they're looking to him to carry the ball and him to be a top guy without giving him much support. And that's a recipe for failure, especially when it's a guy that's really young, didn't have very much to work with coming out of the Shield and being a rookie. Probably the most green rookie out of the three members of the Shield. So he was learning to develop his own personality while working on a main roster with main event talent. I think he still needs that main event talent to work with, and putting him with a more inexperienced wrestlers is going to hold him back a little bit. As far as promos go, he needs to be working with somebody that is not Vince McMahon. He needs to work with somebody who is a top-level talent in this decade, not somebody who watched top-level talent for the last 40 years. He needs somebody who knows how to execute it, not somebody who's watched people execute it. So Roman Reigns does have that little bit more of a push in order to get him where he's supposed to be in challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania. Whether or not that's still the plan is up for discussion. I don't think anybody will really know until after the Royal Rumble, but I'm not putting a dagger in his idea yet. I still think he has a better chance than Daniel Bryan. Also, since we haven't really seen Daniel Bryan on TV yet, they're holding his debut until the Thursday Night SmackDown premiere. So it's kind of hard to pick him to be a winner when you don't know where they're positioning him on the card yet. I do think this is Roman Reigns' spot to lose. Right now it's not looking good, but he's still, I think, the front runner for the WWE. Cam, do you have a different opinion with this going forward?
Well, just to touch base on the Dolph Ziggler, Eric Rowan, Ryback thing is what we talked about last week. Why didn't they just do it at Survivor Series and have him off TV for 4 or 5 weeks instead of a week and a half, and whatever stupid little angle they're going to try to pull next Monday, because I read online earlier that they're not backstage, so apparently they're getting another week off. So, I mean, if you're going to listen to our podcast and go on our website, they might as well not book in reverse. I mean, they're basically booking in reverse again. As far as Roman Reigns goes, I still have him penciled in, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns for the title. I think adding Seth Rollins, I mean, what I might say might be a little obvious, but I think two things. They're either, one, trying to, like you said earlier, take away from the obvious idea of Brock Lesnar retaining, or two, they're not comfortable with Brock Lesnar re-signing and they don't want another Goldberg-Brock Lesnar moment where they have the crowd just shitting all over Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania and just, you know, basically rooting for Roman Reigns by default because Brock Lesnar's going to leave, or the rumor is he's going to UFC or Bellator or whatever he's going to do. So I think they may not be sold on Brock Lesnar coming back. So maybe they put the title, hot shot the title on Seth Rollins, and they do Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins for the title, and Brock Lesnar is relegated to a B or C match when he's leaving the next night. Who knows at this point? I'm not dead, like I said last week, on Roman Reigns. I think if someone deserves and they need to build stars like we've been talking about for years now, I think Roman Reigns, I guess, for more or less is ready. I mean, I think Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose are a little bit more ready to be a main eventer than he is. But, I mean, he has the look. I think his promo on SmackDown and Raw and suffering succotash and all that crap is horrible. I think Vince needs to realize that he is out of touch. I don't care what he thinks or what he said on the Stone Cold's podcast. He's out of touch. He has no idea what he's talking about. Hire someone, bring in Stone Cold, bring in The Rock to be a promo coach if you have to, if you're going to use Roman Reigns as sort of The Rock, but with a bigger, you know, bigger body build. Then they need to do something like that to make him more relatable, because right now he just looks like a goofy character on a goofy comedy show on Fox.
Yeah, just briefly on the idea of Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. I don't see Seth Rollins carrying a championship, the world championship, into WrestleMania. If they do hotshot it onto him at Royal Rumble, I could see a title loss at Fastlane. I could see it on Raw, anywhere. I think he'll be – his first title run, I feel like it's going to be Edge's first title run, where he shocked John Cena by winning the title. He popped a lot of ratings, got a lot of positive critical reviews as champion, but they didn't think he was ready enough to go into WrestleMania as champion, so they took the belt off of him. That's kind of the feeling I have for Seth Rollins right now. Kind of they want him to be a top heel. They want him to be champion, but they're not going to really throw all the money behind him right now. If they, God knows, if they go with him as the champion going into WrestleMania, that means that Triple H is back and probably wrestling Sting. And Undertaker is back, and I don't think he's wrestling Bray Wyatt. I think he's wrestling a much bigger opponent, because there's no way Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan would headline a main event at WrestleMania this early. It's just they're just not big enough pop culture stars yet. You got to have that crossover appeal for to main event WrestleMania. Right now, they're not at that point. Colleen, wrestling wife, how do you feel about Roman Reigns? I know you had some opinions about him. We were really high on him when he first came through and his potential as a single star. How do you feel about him winning the title this year and them going with him as backing him as going forward instead of somebody else like Daniel Bryan?
I think I speak for 98% of the women out there when I say I love Roman Reigns, and you know, he's just one of those guys that women, you know, like. But as far as the personality goes, that's showing through in his promos. Like, there's a difference between stage acting and acting for TV or any kind of film. And I think he kind of needs a different tutor on that one. But I think if they just kind of let him go and let him talk himself instead of coaching him, he'd do a lot better because he does have a lot of charisma. And that has shown through since the very beginning. And that's one of the reasons he's got to this place where he can even be maybe considered to be a contender in anything. It's certainly not because, you know, not just because he's another beast, because, you know, that didn't get Ryback anywhere. So as far as him being a top contender, yeah, I could totally see it. I think they just need to kind of give him a little bit more freedom or, you know, like the guy said, bring in somebody else to coach him. You know, I've always said The Rock would be perfect. They're related. They have a similar vibe, you know, and they've got a lot of the same sense of humor, it seems like. So I can see that working out. But, you know, I'm totally all for it. As far as Daniel Bryan goes, I don't know. He's a bit stale for me. I'm not even going to lie. I've seen him on Total Divas. You know, I like him on that show, but then he comes back to Raw, he's playing the same character. And I don't know, it's just a bit stale for me. So I'm going to have to see what he brings to the table from this point on. If he's just going to keep playing this underdog, you know, you can't really believe it after he's won it so many times, you know? He's won it and, you know, you can't be an underdog if you've already won it. So as far as the Brock Lesnar thing, I don't like Brock Lesnar. I hate the fact that they take him, you know, he leaves for a long time and that they have somebody else talk for him. You know, if you're going to be a top contender for anything or if you're going to hold the belt, you got to be there to speak for yourself. And he doesn't. So at least when, like, they had the John Cena and The Rock thing, you know, The Rock used to come on a fairly regular basis. If not, they would do, like, you know, he would do backstage segment kind of deals that they would air on the show to kind of keep it alive. You know, Brock Lesnar doesn't even do that. You know, he just comes off as lazy, and it drives me nuts. So I don't really honestly care if he's with the company. Do I think Seth Rollins is the right person to throw in that spot? Me personally, probably not. I really like Seth Rollins, but I don't know who I would choose, but he's probably not the person. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Justin, everybody really liked your idea of having Brock Lesnar as WWE champion. It really went very well.
I'm staring at my Brock Lesnar WWE championship action figure that I received in the mail this last week right now, actually. It looks pretty good.
I like to send that through as a constant reminder of your failure on this podcast. The fact that you wrote an entire article about how great it would be.
Hey, I will say this. So this day, if you took me back in time and told me nothing that would happen after you won the title, I would still be on board with it. Now, you would have known how terribly it would have been booked. I would have told you then, hell no, I don't want to see that. But if you try and send me back into July, August right now and say, hey, Brock Lesnar is going to be champ, and don't tell me anything that's going to happen going forward, I would still tell you that I'd be behind it. But they screwed it up. I admitted that I was wrong in supporting it even after the title win. We found out he might not be around as much as he would. And, hey, I am a man of admitting I was wrong, so...
And we are mad enough to make fun of you for it.
And I'm mad enough to take it.
moving on from the world title feed, we had another title switch happen on Raw that was rather, I would say, somewhat newsworthy when it happened, and then a little bit more newsworthy when you saw Dolph Ziggler was going to be fired. So they took the title off Dolph. They took the IC title off Dolph. This came only a few weeks after he won it back from Luke Harper and sent out a tweet saying that he was going to restore prestige to the title. This was a great honor. He wanted to make it how it used to be, where it was the stepping stone to the world championship, and everybody looked at the IC champion as the number two, the next one in line, and they had him lose it to a returning Bad News Barrett. Not only lose it to a returning Bad News Barrett, but completely beaten down twice to Barrett and dropped the title. Now, I said this a couple weeks ago on one of my reports. I think I actually did a little special question on it. I don't like how Dolph Ziggler is being booked. I know, and this is ever since Survivor Series, a little bit before Survivor Series, but ever since then, he's being booked not as the underdog, but kind of as a jobber who can win in the end. You're kind of looking at Barry Horowitz after he defeated Chris Candido in WWF. He gets beat down the entire match, and then near the end, you see a little bit of a rally, then you see him get beat down a little bit more, and then he hits his finisher from absolutely nowhere and gets the win. I'm sorry, but that's not a push. That's just, like I said, looking at a guy who's getting lucky over and over and over again. I don't see him anymore as a main event player than I did before Survivor Series, and that's bad. He should be near the top. He should be looked at as one of the top baby faces on that roster because he is. He's one of the only guys you can look at besides John Cena, and now Daniel Bryan finally he's coming back, baby. But besides John Cena, who could be a relevant name to wrestle world champion? Now he's fired after losing to Bad News Barrett and absolutely being run out of town. How do you repair this for Dolph Ziggler? How do you make him into a relevant figure again and not go through this weak-ass booking that they're trying to do with him in order to show that he's resilient or whatever the hell they want to show him. Sorry, Shawn Michaels was resilient and still was able to deliver a hell of a lot of offense in his matches. He fought a lot of big guys, but still was able to come back and have his comeback, have his big spots, put on a back-and-forth match. This is getting pretty bad with Dolph Ziggler, and I don't know how they're going to fix it other than like him have a completely dominant performance every single week up until WrestleMania, and I really don't see that happening. Kelly, you're a fan of both guys. You're a fan of Bad News Barrett and of Dolph Ziggler. I know you were happy Barrett won the IC title, but how do you feel about what's happened to Ziggler and where he's going in the next couple weeks?
I love Barrett. Like, I'm a huge fan of his. So, yes, I'm very happy the title's back on him. I wish it would have been a different title. I'm not going to lie. He's won that one, like, way too many times. But then again, so is Ziggler. So, as far as Ziggler goes, I totally disagree with you. And I think that you are going to hate me for my opinion on this, but I think that he is never going to be a main event guy, no matter what he does. And it's not just because of creative or how they're booking him. I just don't think he has it in him. And I'm going to be, and I know you probably hate that. And I know the guy is talented, but he's also kind of like a Muppet. And that's all I can think about when I see him wrestle some days. He's just over the top, and he does have some great spots. He honestly does have some very memorable moments. But do I see him as like a Randy Orton, a John Cena, even a Daniel Bryan? Like, no, I don't. So I think it's fine. So with Barrett.
So you're fine with them just and I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but you're fine with them just kind of burying him as a wrestler and giving him a poorly booked storyline just because it's him?
It's not that it's just because it's him, but I don't think they're going to bury him, to be honest. I think he might have a feud going on with Barrett, and, you know, but I don't, he's an upper mid-card guy. He's never going to get above that. So even putting him in a spot where he can contend with, like, a Daniel Bryan, and I don't know, I just don't see it happening. I don't see it playing out well. So, yeah, I'm fine with it.
Okay, Cam?
I don't even know where to begin. I think they should have just, one, just stripped him of the title if they're going to fire him, because if he wins the match, then they're just going to strip him of the title anyway when they fire him, right? So they kind of should have just been like, all right, you're not the champion anymore. We're just going to have a stupid little tournament or whatever. Because, I mean, Wade Barrett's a heel, but he's not associated with the authority, so why does Wade Barrett get a title shot? I know he was the champion before his injury, but there's just too many holes to poke in that logic. Like I said last week, they should have just fired Ziggler or had them lose at Survivor Series, not let Ziggler be. I mean, Ziggler is the first, besides Triple H and Seth Rollins, Ziggler was the first babyface to ever be in contact with Sting in the WWE ring ever in history. It's Dolph Ziggler, not John Cena, not Hogan, not anyone else. It's Dolph Ziggler. And for them to put him in a spot like that and then relegate him to some stupid mid-card angle, that whatever they're going to do with the Royal Rumble, and then have him be on the pre-show more than likely at WrestleMania, if even not even on the card at all, working the access events, who knows. I agree with Colleen that he's not going to be a main eventer, and not because it's not, he doesn't have it in him. I think it's because they don't want him to have it in him. He's just being held back just because the WWE is one big frat house, and because he pissed off somebody in the frat house, he never gets to be a top guy. He's been a world champion. He's done everything you could probably ask someone to do that was never a world or a WWE champion. I think, like I said, I mean, I don't understand. They were building him up and building him up and building him up. They make money off these guys. And for them to put him in a stupid firing angle and then bring him back, and like I said, more than likely do nothing or little to nothing with him at WrestleMania, and then the rest of 2015, who knows what. I mean, they'll get hot on him again. He's just going to be one of those guys. I mean, he's not even going to be a Piper, or he's not even going to be one of those guys. He's just going to be, when we're older, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, remember that Dolph Ziggler guy? It's going to be like, you know, he was there, but that was about it. He's probably not going to be a Hall of Famer. It's just a kind of a shame. I mean, I know he likes to do comedy, and he could probably be an actor and all of those things, but it's kind of just a shame that a guy that's, you know, one of the best sellers and, you know, arguably one of the better talkers in the WWE is just not looked at as someone more than just a mid-card guy.
See, while I see Dolph Ziggler, I agree. If he's going to be a world champion, I think he's going to win as a heel. I see him more kind of as I see Luke Harper coming soon. The guy who is right there to challenge the champion and is brash enough to make the challenge and is sneaky enough as a heel to get, like, non-title wins or to cheat him or attack him from behind, but yet the babyface champion is going to come out on top. That's kind of how I see Dolph Ziggler. I see him more as that number two heel, as somebody who can be at the top, can wrestle the champion, but not quite win it. It all depends on how long they keep him as babyface, too, and who the WWE champion is. If you go with somebody like the Daniel Bryan, if you have somebody, I won't say Dean Ambrose, because Dean Ambrose kind of has to be a heel in order to be WWE champion. I don't think he would be a babyface. But even somebody like a Roman Reigns, and if you get the sneaky heel of brash heel like Dolph Ziggler, I think it could work. He just needs to hop the fence and join the other side. And I know he was there for a long time and couldn't get anything going for himself, but with the right champion at the top of the card, I definitely could see the feud moving on. What about you, Justin?
See, I think Ziggler could work in the heel, but I think that problem you're going to run into is always the fact that the internet audience, the male hardcore audience, are going to cheer Ziggler no matter what. So while he could play a heel and act like a heel on TV with no problem, if he goes up against somebody like a John Cena or a Roman Reigns, the top of the card for the title, I still think you're going to see Ziggler getting cheered more often than not, especially with your hardcore male audience. The way this angle has kind of played out, I think that they would have just been better off having the Authority win at Survivor Series, because you pretty much just made the last 6 weeks completely pointless with everything that's happened this past Monday on Raw. I don't know how you're going to get Ziggler to recover and be kind of star. I just don't see him anywhere, any kind of big match going into WrestleMania. I mean, I think the way this is going to play out is you're going to start to see these guys maybe show up and just run in and interfere in matches and then out. I think it's really cool, but I don't think it'll happen. You can see something like Sting being up at the top of the rafters, and you see guys like Ziggler, and you see Ziggler right at throwing up there with him, just kind of watching everything from above, like Sting used to do back in WCW. He would watch the NWO from the top of the arena and just not do anything. You would just sit there and maybe come in and cause havoc a little later on in the show. That would be something that I think would kind of help Ziggler and Ryback and Rowan going forward to get some more heat with them. But now I just seem to kind of look, I don't want to say stupid, but the fact that they couldn't stand up for themselves against the Authority this past Monday at Raw and just kind of stood there and took it, I don't know how any of them recover from this. I think Ziggler, I'm curious to see what would have happened with Ziggler had he not gotten hurt when his world title run happened. I think at that point in the WWE, finally, maybe we're ready to go with Ziggler as a top guy in the company with the world title, and he had his concussion, and then when he came back, I think not even a month later, he was losing the title to Alberto Del Rio, and just kind of went down the card from there. So I think Ziggler's time as a potential top guy in the company has kind of come and gone. I think, like we've all kind of said, he's going to be a guy that is going to be a popular mid-card act, whether he's a heel or a face. And he's somebody that you could probably throw into something like an Elimination Chamber match, something like that, where there's multiple guys in it, and you wouldn't seem out of place. But I think as far as being a main eventer going forward and being a guy you can build a company around and be your top face heel, I think those days are gone, especially now with the fact that the Shield is broken up and all three of those guys are going to be stars individually. And you got your Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper's who will probably be stars individually. So I think there's going to be somebody that, fortunately, as a result of the numbers game, isn't going to be able to see his time at the top of the card anytime in the near future.
Okay,
so you kind of agreed, kind of did it. What was that, Kale?
Oh, I just want to say something before we moved on. I think Ziggler works as a, when we did the heel thing, especially with Vicky Guerrero, I think, I mean, he tried to be the arrogant, cocky Shawn Michaels heel. I mean, it doesn't click. I think babyface is way better for him, especially with the audience. I mean, people love him as a babyface. As a heel, like Justin said, I mean, we're going to cheer him regardless, but I think that's just because we like his in-ring work, or the fact that he likes to be a pro wrestler, things of that nature. As a babyface, he's over. I mean, almost every single town they go to, I mean, there might be those towns here and there that he might get a huge pop, but those are tiny towns. But everywhere else, he's really over as a babyface, I think, especially if they turn Dean Ambrose heel after Mania and they don't have nothing going for Ambrose and they don't have nothing going for Ziegler. I think that could be one hell of a feud, because I think a Dean Ambrose heel turn is coming, and I think it's going to come sooner than later.
I think you guys all talk about him like he's a Make-A-Wish kid who had a Disney trip dangled in front of his face and then got it taken away. You can do everything a company asks you to do and still not make it to the top. It's just the facts. I mean, it doesn't mean he has the it factor to get up there. And, you know, come on. He's just... It doesn't mean he's, like, dead and gone and he's never going to come back just because they did this to him. He's a guy, like you guys all keep saying, people are going to cheer him no matter what. He's going to make it back. So.
Point, I think, like, especially if you go back to his cash-in of the Money in the Bank title, like that pop and the pop that he had going for him now, and like I said earlier, him and Sting were in the ring together as two baby faces. I think all that momentum, like the other momentum and like the momentum before his concussion and the momentum with Chris Jericho and all the other momentum we can bring up is gone again. And this one I think hurts the most because he's 35 years old. He gets his ass kicked every single day and he kicks his own ass to sell for these guys. And he's never going to be a main eventer. It's not his fault. I think it's the WWE's fault. I mean, he's a moneymaker. I mean, you see a lot of people wearing his merch, especially as a babyface.
I see your point. At the same time, I don't think you can predict that because the right storyline can propel anybody up the ladder. I mean, who would have ever thought the Bellas would have made it back to the way they did?
Bellas aren't back. I don't know. I guess we can move on.
I don't know. They have a lot more FaceTime than a lot of people in that company.
Oh, that's true. Well, I mean, if you do the right sexual favors. But that's neither here nor there.
Or if you're smart enough to get an e-show.
the politics of divas in WWE. moving on from that, before we start getting weird phone calls, we have one more thing to bring up, and then we're going to move on to our top three surprise entrances in the Royal Rumble. I want to give out our phone number. Our phone number is 818-532-9786. If you're listening live, we want to hear who you believe is the biggest surprise entrant in Royal Rumble history. I know we haven't talked about it yet. I know I'm kind of throwing this topic at you, but that's what we're going to be talking about in a couple minutes. So if you want to give us your pick for the biggest surprise entry into the Royal Rumble, call 818-532-9786. Hell, if you want to talk Monday Night Raw, last week, this week, want to talk WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, whatever you want to talk about, give us a call, and we'll give you something for free. We'll give you a DVD, we'll give you Blu-ray, we'll give you a hat, we'll give you whatever we have here. We'll send it out to you for free, as long as you call in. You call 818-532-9786. Call in, talk to us. It's Wrestling Pulse Cast. Moving on, the last topic I wanted to bring up was another one that happened on Raw this past week, which was seemingly the end of the Dean Ambrose Bray Wyatt feud. Now, if it is the end, thank God it's over. But the way it was over, the way it ended, and what happened, was weird to me. I don't know how it was to you guys, but for me, it seemed really out of place, really awkward. The heel one, it's an ambulance match on top of it. Both guys kind of looked a little weird considering last week they almost did the same stuff to each other, except that it was, or not last week, 2 weeks ago, when they had their Miracle on 34th Street match, and instead of throwing crutches and through tables with the ring crosses on it, they were hitting each other with trees and falling through. I don't remember what the other thing was. But yeah, it was another match where it wasn't phenomenal. It was good. It kind of lived up to what they've been doing this entire feud, where their matches are okay. The promos are right. We haven't really seen much substance out of either guy. Dean Ambrose looked weak throughout the feud. He looked dumb throughout the feud. Bray Wyatt looked weak. He looked cowardly in a lot of the situations. Neither guy came out looking too good, but they still ended the night with, or their feud with Bray Wyatt coming out on top in the last match of their feud. Now, I brought this up on my thoughts column after Raw, was how are we really supposed to look at this going forward? Sure, Bray Wyatt won, but what is Dean Ambrose going to do? This is a guy who is considered the new loose cannon. He's a guy who doesn't back down from the fight. He's a guy that gives it his all. And Bray Wyatt brought this feud very personal to him. Now we're just expecting him to show up to Raw and wrestle whatever match they put him in. We don't think that he's going to try to seek down Bray Wyatt and get another extract another piece of revenge from him, considering he lost again. And in his mind, it should be that he hasn't gotten what he wanted out of the feud with Bray Wyatt, and he still needs to kind of kick his ass a little bit. But we're not going to get that. It seems like it's over. How do you guys feel about the fact that a heel not only went over cleanly, has gone over every single match that they had, and now the babyface is just supposed to forget about this feud and that it ever happened and that he lost the feud. He lost every match, and he lost every battle, and he lost the war on top of it. How does this affect both of their characters moving forward? Justin?
Well, I think as far as Ambrose goes, there's evidence on SmackDown, and I think if you go onto their WWE.com today, he's now making some kind of partnership again with Roman Reigns. I know we've teamed with them on SmackDown, and then the Raw preview for tonight has talking about them being kind of reunited as a tag team. To me, that gives me more indication, kind of like what Cam brought up earlier, about a Dean Ambrose heel turn coming sooner rather than later. I don't know how that'll work, because, again, I think if you had an Ambrose versus Reigns feud, their male hardcore audience, the internet audience, is going to side with Ambrose over Reigns. I don't know if you want that going into WrestleMania. But I agree. What does Ambrose do next? Ambrose is a guy that, like you said, seems like should spit it out, Justin. Ambrose is a guy that seems like he should want to get revenge on somebody until it's all said and done. But, of course, we just saw the Seth Rollins feud. He went over and just started a feud with Bray Wyatt, even though he really didn't get any kind of settling with Rollins. So who knows what's going on with that there. I think, like I said, I think the Ambrose heel turn, I agree with Cam, is coming sooner rather than later, just because there's so many faces now with Daniel Bryan being back, with Cena, with Roman Reigns, and then you got your Dolph Ziggler, you still want to push him too. So there's a lot of guys on the face side. So Ambrose is, like you said, is kind of a mystery to me. But, of course, then you have Bray Wyatt, who's a mystery as well, because Bray Wyatt wins this match. What does he go on to next? I mean, we have 2 weeks between now and the Royal Rumble. He's going to cut some random promos talking about the Royal Rumble going forward. I think the fact that Bray Wyatt came out on top a lot during this feud makes me think more and more that maybe the match with The Undertaker is happening. They wanted him to get strong and build him up to a match with The Undertaker going into WrestleMania. The way this feud has been booked makes me think that it's quite possible that it does happen. So it's kind of weird, like you said, just the way it ended. I thought the match was just okay on Raw. Ambrose dominated, I think, the good majority of the match. And then for him to come out on the losing end, I guess, is maybe the WWE's way of saying, hey, Ambrose looked good during the match, but he just didn't win. The final, he just didn't win in the end, which I just think is dumb. But I agree. I don't know what's next for these guys, like you said, Matt, especially with Ambrose's character being a guy who wants to get revenge and is a loose cannon all the time. Is he just supposed to be done with Bray Wyatt now, and all of a sudden he's teaming with Roman Reigns? Does he turn on Roman Reigns, and then that is back to WrestleMania match, where if you're not going to have Roman Reigns break for the title, you Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns, which could backfire just as much, like I said, because the crowd will probably be Ambrose over Reigns. Who knows what will happen? And I agree that this feud, which I thought could have had some potential going forward, just kind of fell flat to me, especially in the match part. I think it has to do with that it came during the time of WWE booking in November and December, where it's the holiday season and they're just trying to kind of get through things, and they give you all these weird matches like the boot camp match, Tribute to the Troops and Miracle on 34th Street, whatever it was called. Master on 34th season WK review, but whatever that match was called on the Christmas show, it just came at a bad time for everything to come together, and now it just kind of leaves more questions than answers with both of these guys going into 2015.
I honestly think it was a throwaway feud between the two of them. I don't think you ever meant to remember it. It was like one of those things where we'll throw it at the wall, and if it sticks, great. If not, it's okay, because we never really meant it to happen. It's just a space filler between when we can get them into something else. You know, let's face it, everything was put on hold once Roman Reigns went off onto injury, and so I think that kind of brought along this feud. As far as where they go, like, next, I don't think that Ambrose has to be a babyface or a heel. I think his character would be far better off if that was never distinguished. You know, he could be one or the other on any given day. You know, he's supposed to be unstable. That's the whole point of his character. So if you go ahead and define him purely as a babyface, I think that ruins his entire character. If you define him purely as a heel and he has a heel turn, I think that destroys his character once again. So I think one day he could go and attack Roman Reigns, and the next day he could go and save John Cena. And I think that would make for a far more dynamic character than any other one they have in the universe. As far as can he walk away from Wyatt having lost all of those matches, if anybody in the WWE can, I think it's him. Right now he is a babyface, so to speak. And let's face it, one of the main attributes of a babyface in the WWE is to let, you know, to know when he's the bigger man and can walk away from something until the time comes up when he can beat the shit out of the guy. Then it all gets brought up again.
Thanks, Jeff.
Not to get into much of the Bray Wyatt Dean Ambrose thing, because the more I look at it, the more I think it was kind of a throwaway feud. I think Dean Ambrose was put into the quote unquote second number two babyface spot when Roman Reigns went out for the time being. Like you said, Matt, there's only so much he can take, I think. You know, is he going to come back and avenge Bray Wyatt? I think him putting with him with Roman Reigns, and this is what I've thought about for a little bit now, is they can have him team with Roman Reigns. It's fine. Come the Royal Rumble, Dean Ambrose needs to be eliminated by Roman Reigns. Something needs to happen to where we get to the point where we see Dean Ambrose, John Cena at WrestleMania. I think at this point, John Cena, Rusev is the worst idea anybody could have. I think the WWE knows that. Dean Ambrose versus John Cena would sell some tickets that aren't sold yet, strictly on the fact that a loose cannon heel teener, I think Dean Ambrose right now is the teener of the WWE universe. He was what Dolph Ziggler was, what Shawn Michaels was. He's a teener. He's not a babyface, not a heel. He's a teener. He's in the middle. Him and John Cena would be amazing. I think you could get him away from Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins for the time being, because Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose is going to become the Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, the CM Punk, Daniel Bryan that never was, you know, the John Cena Edge, if you want to go that far. I think that's what eventually what those two will become. So they need to get them away from each other. So I think a heel Dean Ambrose going against, you know, no one going into Fastlane, have him lose to, you know, have him be eliminated by Roman Reigns at the Rumble, have him go away for a little bit and have him come back basically as a heel to attack John Cena. And him and John Cena, I think, would be a great third, fourth match for a big WrestleMania looking forward.
Yeah, John Cena's position at WrestleMania is going to be an interesting one to deal with. This will be the second year in a row that he's not involved in the world title picture, which, not bad. I mean, it's nice to have a lot of guys involved in the discussion for the main events at WrestleMania. The problem that might run into is that he always wins at WrestleMania. Oh, no, he doesn't always win. But when it comes to building up younger stars at WrestleMania, it doesn't look good. He was in the very fortunate position to be that young star that was put over a lot at WrestleMania. They were winning against Big Show, then winning against JBL. He beat Shawn Michaels. He beat Triple H. He beat almost everybody on the roster at WrestleMania. And if you want to put him in the ring against, say, Dean Ambrose, I don't know how it would be. A heel Dean Ambrose or a Dean Ambrose that's on the wrong side of the tracks. Because there's no way he's going to be a real heel against John Cena. Well, nobody's a real heel when it comes to being John Cena's opponent. But having Dean Ambrose in that position should be heavily considered, but I think cautiously considered as well. You're going to have a lot of fans cheering for Dean Ambrose and a lot of people wanting to see that torch passed to him as the younger guy and as the guy that is ready to take a larger role in the company. And can John Cena lose to a heel at WrestleMania? I think that's a really big question that must be considered. Justin?
Should John Cena lose to a heel at WrestleMania? Absolutely. He should have lost to Bray Wyatt last year at WrestleMania. It's going into WrestleMania this year. I mean, and if you go through with John Cena and Rusev, I think you're going to see Cena win that feud simply because, you know, Cena, America, everybody will cheer. He would probably come out to some military procession entrance like he did, I think, like at WrestleMania 26 against Batista. That kind of feud, I think you'll see Cena win. But if you put, like you said, Cena up against somebody like a Dean Ambrose, I like that idea. I think I never even thought of. I think a Cena-Ambrose match, like you said, Cam, would be a good third, fourth match on top of your WrestleMania card, especially when you got guys like Lesnar and Daniel Bryan who can be in the other top two matches that are names that could draw people in. I think it's best when you look at a WrestleMania card to spread your top stars out and try to get them into different types of matches with guys who are on the cusp of becoming stars and could use a rub like that if they face somebody like a John Cena. I think in this day and age with the WWE Network, I think they should be taking more risk like that, where I know network subscribers matter, but pay-per-view buys, don't really mean as much anymore. I mean, if this was still strictly pay-per-view, I could see them trying to throw as many of their top name stars at the top. But now when you have the network, I think you're going to be able to attract more people, especially if you can only subscribe for 1 month for a cheaper price. If you put more people, more younger guys like your Ambroses and Rollins and your Wyatts in bigger matches. And they just have to be willing to let their top guys like Cena, who could take a big loss like that and still be considered a top guy in the company, or an Orton, who could take a big loss like that and still be considered a top guy in the company. But the WWE needs to realize going forward that you need your young guys to get big wins if you want them to be taken seriously by the majority of your audience. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case over the last few years. Like I said, just looking back at Bray Wyatt, even at last year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's going to be weird to see how this card shapes out, simply because there are more options. There's more they can move with. We saw last year it was a little rushed when it came to the Shield because they were just thrown into a 6-man tag. And their tag match lasted all of 30 seconds or something like that. So they're at that where there's a lot of talent and a lot of guys on the cusp of making major waves in WWE. It's just up to them to put them on the right path and in the right spot to have everybody succeed and have everybody prosper from it. And that's going to take a lot of veterans to help them not only get over in the ring and lose to them and have them get that rub, but also it's going to take a lot of the veterans to help them through this part, help them through the transition of moving to the main event. When we look at the main event roster right now, you have John Cena, you have Randy Orton, you have Kane, you have guys who have been there forever. And while they can still go, while they can still be in that main event, they have to start bringing guys up there with them. They can't look at guys like Triple H or guys like Booker Kane still and Undertaker and look at those guys as being, oh, okay, there's still guys above us that can kind of cradle us and bring us into the main event and work with us there. They don't have that anymore. They are at the top, tippy top of everything. There's not many of their peers that they can work with anymore. So they have to look at guys that are a step below them and bring them up to that level. And they haven't had that experience before. And if they have had it, they've kind of butchered it or kind of dropped the ball with it. Now they really have to do it in order for the company to succeed, in order for the company to keep moving forward. And I think it's going to be a hard transitional moment for them. It's going to be a hard time because they've always had that little safety net. They've always been able to say, okay, well, Triple H is still up here, or Booker T is still up here, or Edge is still here, or Christian's still around, or we can move him more into the main event picture. Or guys like Alberto Del Rio or Rey Mysterio, guys who are kind of that upper mid card that they can just kind of throw in there. Now that upper mid card is full of younger guys. They need to make that next step, and it's going to be difficult for a lot of guys to not only swallow that, but also open themselves up to putting them over and not feel like they're taking a step down, but feel like, no, we're working towards them being at the same level as us, so we can be the Triple H's. We can be the Undertakers and say, okay, well, now these guys have a support system in us where we don't always have to be in the main event, but we can step in when need be. That being said, we're going to move on to our top three for tonight. Our top three, the top three surprise entrance into the Royal Rumble, or the top three biggest surprise winners of the Royal Rumble, or biggest surprise participants of the Rumble, or the most surprising members of the Royal Rumble. A lot of different ways you can word this, but we are moving into our top three. I'm going to give the phone number out again. Our phone number is 818-532-9786. Call that phone number if you want to talk to us about Royal Rumble, if you want to talk to us about Raw, about WrestleMania, about anything you want to talk about. We're moving on to our top threes. If you want to give your top three most surprising entrance into the Royal Rumble, again, our phone number is 818-532-9786. Call our phone number. Talk to us. I'll send you out a free DVD. I'll send you out a free Blu-ray, whatever you want. It is 818-532-9786. And with that lovely introduction from the 1990s and the Royal Rumble theme song from back then, it's our top three most surprising entrants into the Royal Rumble. Again, we just go with what we know. We go with how we feel is the most surprising. It's all subjective. It's all opinionated. You can bash whatever we say, and I'm sure we'll bash each other. But moving into our top three, again, this is awesome. The Wrestling Wife has left us. She bowed out from this point forward, so it's just going to be the three of us. Three of us, top three. Hey, it worked last week. Let's move it on this week. Our number three, I'm throwing it over to Cam. What's your number three? I kind of have a feeling of who's going to be on your list. I don't know when, but I have a feeling what's going to be on your list. So let's say your number three anyway and see what you had to say.
You know me so well. My number three, I mean, I thought about this, and I was watching a couple of Royal Rumbles the last couple of days because it's the season. Justin and I agree that it's our favorite pay-per-view, mostly because it's of the Royal Rumble gimmick match.
I agree, too. I get to check it off my bucket list this year because I'm going, but which I will throw out there, we are going to have live coverage on the site. I'm going to be posting photos. I'm going to be posting news updates. It'll be on my Twitter as well, at Matt Herrick. It'll be on HTCWrestling.com. I will be posting constantly throughout the night and of the weekend. So if you follow me at Matt Herrick, it's MattHarrick, follow me on there. I'll be all weekend long, I'll be posting stuff. And then when the Royal Rumble comes up, I will be posting on HTCWrestling.com. We constantly live updated and with new photos, new news, new opinions, everything throughout the night. Hopefully you join us there. And maybe, who knows, maybe I'll be able to break a couple nice little news bits with my media passion. Who knows? So we'll definitely follow us at HTCWrestling.com or at Matt Herrick on Twitter. But going back to you, Cam, what was your number three before I was able to throw that out there?
My number three, mostly I put my number three at – well, I put Hacksaw Jim Duggan at the 2009 Royal Rumble, mostly at the number three because they put him at the 29th entrant, which I thought was kind of awkward. So he was automatically one of the final entrant or a few guys in the Royal Rumble. And, I mean, not necessarily a surprise because he's made a few of appearances, you know, in between since he won the first Royal Rumble, and he's one of the legends they can always call on to make an appearance like that. But I thought most likely just because of the spot they put him in at the Royal Rumble was just really surprising to me.
Justin, sorry, I'm losing my voice.
Okay, that one didn't really cross my mind. I could see where you're coming from, where with the, you know, you don't really see the surprise entrance come that late in a Royal Rumble, especially the 30-man in the Royal Rumble, when at number 29. That one actually, like I said, I can't say it crossed my mind at all, and especially because you said he's been in other Royal, I think he was in 2011 or 12, he was a surprise entrant, I think, too. So, I don't know. That one just really didn't cross my mind personally as memorable or anything at all.
And I am going to be brutally honestly, I did not hear what you said, Cam. Who is your number three?
Hacksaw Jim Duggan from 2009. Mostly because of his position in the Royal Rumble. Not because he was a surprise entrant. I think my point is if the 29th entrant, if there's going to be a surprise entrant, it should be someone returning. Like this year, if they're going to use a surprise, it should be Sheamus at 29 or something like that. I'm just a mark for Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
They did a lot when Mr. Perfect came back in 2008 or whatever it was when, or no,
2002.
Yeah.
That was going to be my number three, actually, but because he was announced before the Royal Rumble, I didn't use him.
No, it's just bad. No, that was awful. It didn't cross Justin or I. It didn't cross our mind just because it's irrelevant. No, that's terrible. No. Okay. Justin, save us. Please.
All right. I'm going to go with my number three as from 2001 with the Honky Tonk Man's return from the Royal Rumble. It was in the middle of Kane's destruction of all the mid-carders on the roster at the current time, and the Honky Tonk Man came out, did his little shake, rumble, roll with the guitar, sang his theme song for a little bit, and then immediately turned around and Kane smashed him over the head with the guitar and eliminated him. It was a short appearance, it didn't last long, but it was a nice little kind of mark out moment if you're a fan of the Honky Tonk Man, seeing him around in the WWE after not being, well, I shouldn't say that. He was there a couple years earlier with the whole awful rockabilly gimmick, but it was a nice little nostalgic act, which is kind of what these surprise appearances at the Royal Rumble should be about. So Honky Tonk Man coming out in 2001 is my number three.
I'll get behind it a little bit simply because it was in the midst of total destruction of the Royal Rumble and the Hardcore Rumble and everything that went on in his huge record-setting Royal Rumble match year. It's not I don't know. It wasn't one that really stood out to me. That's probably because it was the Honky Tonk Man. I guess like it was a nice little moment, especially with it being so cheesy and just a throwaway entrant. Cam?
That was going to be my number five. That was one of my honorable mentions, specifically because it was during it was like a comedic relief during Kane's dominant performance. I think Matt's just going to shit all over our legend picks. That's why I didn't go with any more legends other than Hacksaw Tim Duggan, because I knew he would shit all over it. But I think that was a good pick, and I think that, like I said, 2000 Royal Rumble is one of my top three favorites. If we ever did a top like Royal Rumble show, I think that would be that one would qualify strictly because I thought it was a good overall just gruesome battle royal opposed to a standard Royal Rumble. I think, you know, it had a good spot, especially with Triple H and Shawn Michaels and stuff like that, or excuse me, Stone Cold and Triple H. So I think that's a good point or a good choice.
Yeah.
And Matt, I texted you the rest of my entrance because I have to bow out because I have to go back to work. But I'll be next week for our prediction show. But I texted you my number two and number one. But I will talk to you guys next week.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the show, guys.
Okay, I was waiting for him to sign off just so I can bash him, though, not telling us what he was going to be on for only 5 minutes into our top three show. But
beforehand.
Yes, exactly. Nice of him. Anyway, and for that, I'm going to shit over his next two picks, even though his next two picks were going to be on my list. So that's why I'm not going to announce his next two picks. that being said, me shitting all over Legends picks, if that was going to be the case, I was going to bring up Dory Funk entering in the 1997 Royal Rumble instead of his brother Terry, because Terry couldn't show up because he was in Japan or something of that nature. But yeah, so throwing that away, I'll go with my number three, just get it out of the way, and that's Beth Phoenix in at number three. In the 2010 Royal Rumble, when she entered number four, I want to say, and eliminated the Great Khali with a kiss, and then went on to kick the crap out of CM Punk before he eliminated her and moved on with his sermons of the 2010 Royal Rumble, which we talked about at nauseum with his straight edge society gimmick and talking and preaching to everybody after eliminating people here and there and whatever the case may be. But she was also the second woman to enter the Royal Rumble, first being obviously China, which would have been a great surprise entry into the Rumble, but she was already announced that she was going to be in the Rumble as a member of D-Generation X. She had won a Battle Royal, the next year she won it, or something of that nature, where she eliminated Vince McMahon in the corporate Rumble, where it was DX versus the corporation, and she eliminated Vince McMahon, and then Austin came out and kicked crap out of everybody. Whatever it was, but Beth Phoenix, I think, by far was the better entrant. Like I said, she kicked the crap out of CM Punk, and that was pretty awesome. But Dustin, what's your opinion of Beth Phoenix and the fact that she's only the second one ever to enter? There hasn't been a woman since then.
Don't forget Carla entered the Rumble, I think, and whenever she comes at some point. I remember that. I remember what she did, but I remember her being in the Rumble in 2011 or 2012.
That Phoenix, I think, was only...
I remember Karma being in it, because I remember watching it with my friends.
That's right. She came out and eliminated Michael Cole. Beat the crap out of Michael Cole. I'll have to look it up. But either way, she was only the second one ever to enter. So second woman. So number two on the number two on the list of women in the Rumble. She was the second one.
I know this one was an honorable mention of mine too. Like you said, it had been such a long time since a woman had been in the Rumble since China's over 10 years. It was kind of an interesting spot of oohs and ahs out of the crowd. Like you said, it was kind of a comedy-ish spot, but it was a well done comedy spot. I think Kali was still playing the Punjabi Playboy gimmick at the time. So, you know, it was a funny elimination, an elimination that made sense from a character perspective, where Beth Phoenix kind of seduced, quote unquote, the Great Kali and pulled him over the rope to eliminate him. And then, like you said, got the crap kicked out of her by her, and then interacted with CM Punk. So it was a well done woman entrant in the Rumble that I don't think any of the three people involved in that whole spot with Punk, Phoenix, or the Great Kali came off looking bad from any of it in the end, especially when you figure Kali being eliminated kind of played into his gimmick.
Yeah, and part of the reason why I chose it as well, it was, like I said, it was part of a big moment in Rumble history with CM Punk and the whole straight edge promos and everything of that nature. So having her in the middle of that and her, one, he didn't try to save her in any sense of the word. He didn't try to pitch to her like he did everybody else. So, well, except for Zack Ryder, he just kind of said it was worthless going and trying to recruit him. But it was a nice little change to actually seeing a woman come in and not only eliminate somebody, but then beat the crap out of CM Punk, too. And it wasn't, like, really used to, quote, Jerry Lawler, I think, or JR using her feminine wiles to woo a superstar. That really wasn't in her nature. So for her to actually go straight ahead and just start kissing Great Kali instead of trying to clothesline him out of the ring, I think that surprised a lot of people as well, not just her eliminating him. Moving on, let's go on to your number two.
My number two is going to be from the 2004 Royal Rumble with the entrance of Mick Foley into the match. Kind of what happened was Test was taken out backstage and pretty much played up the fact that he was later stiff as a board and was actually, now that I think about how I'm going to word this, he played it up like he was dead, and he's now dead, and that kind of comes off kind of bad, so I apologize to anybody that didn't like my phrasing of that. But, and then Austin is kind of off-camera looked and said, you go out there, and then it was Mick Foley, and Foley had kind of left earlier because he was not ready to, or afraid to, whatever you want to say, fight Randy Orton. And then Foley came into the match, him and Orton started brawling, Foley eliminated himself and Orton. It got a big pop out of the crowd. Foley and Orton then brawled all around the ring during that time, and it basically set up the next 3 months worth of feuding between Mick Foley and Randy Orton. You had the match at WrestleMania with the Rock and Sock Connection against Evolution, and then you had that Mick Foley Randy Orton brawl the next pay per view that pretty much was a very good feud for the year. And not only that, it pretty much fully elevated Randy Orton to main event status by going one-on-one with Mick Foley and coming out looking good in the end of it. So this moment kind of right here set up all the rest of the 2004 and the Foley-Orton feud and everything that happened from it going forward, and it was a nice little surprise in the match as well.
Okay, for anybody out there listening thinking they're hearing this all over again, Justin just repeated all my thoughts and my reasons as why I thought Mick Foley was one of the great performers in Royal Rumble history. Because this was one of the matches I mentioned when pitching Foley as one of the greatest performers in Royal Rumble history. We already heard all of this, Justin. You basically just repeated everything I said when trying to justify my pick as Mick Foley.
Yeah, I mean, I think last week, though, you were kind of more focused on the three faces of Foley match than this one was. That's what kind of spurred our debate going forward. I don't know. I think this one is just, I think you can have a good performance like this and not be a great performer in the Rumble, I guess, is what I would say, but that's why it's number two on my list.
Okay, well, I will put a little wrench in your idea for this. Throughout the night, they were teasing the fact that Mick Foley was going to be in the Rumble. The whole idea was that the week before on Raw, or 2 weeks before on Raw, Randy Orton spit in the face of Mick Foley. Then he called out Foley as a member of Evolution. He called out, if you're really a man, I will reserve a seat for you at the Royal Rumble. I want to see you come up and fight me. I don't think you will. So throughout the night, they actually showed his feet right behind the announcers that was empty, saying that this was Mick Foley's seat. This was the seat that was reserved for him. And they were saying, JR is saying, if Mick Foley doesn't show up, I will say he's not a man. That he did not show up to face Randy Orton, so he is not a man. He didn't show up for a fight. His manhood was in question because Randy Orton punked him out. If he does not show up for the Royal Rumble, then he is not a man. And then he shows up for the Royal Rumble, and he comes out, and he kicks Randy Orton's ass, and sets up the whole feud for the rest of the year, which actually elevated Orton to the fact that he buys over as the World Heavyweight Champion. After that, it kind of sucked for him the rest of the year. But he did culminate in winning the world title at Survivor Series against Richards. But yes, this Royal Rumble started all of that. So, that being said, this really wasn't a surprise, per se, with Mick Foley coming in, since he was challenged to be in the Royal Rumble for the last 3 weeks, and it was a whole angle that was building throughout the entire night.
Well, I think to me, the fact that he was, like you said, he was told to be at the Rumble, but he wasn't officially announced. As I mean, like you said, you can throw the hints out there, but he wasn't officially announced as an entrant into the Royal Rumble. So that's why I'm putting it on my surprise list, because like you said, he was asked to be there, but he wasn't an entrant into the Royal Rumble. So that is why this is made number two on my list.
Wow. You are really, really throwing the vernacular around. That. Wow. Okay. Okay. Whatever you want. I will throw out my number two. My number two is in 2011 with Diesel coming back in the Royal Rumble. Now, because of what I said, I know what you're going to throw out there is that it was heavily rumored that Kevin Nash was returning at the Rumble, as was Booker T, since they weren't returning to TNA as part of the new Main Event Mafia. Okay, that's fine. A lot of people thought that Kevin Nash might make a return. I don't think anybody believed Diesel would be making a return at the 2011 Royal Rumble. When his music hit and you heard that trucker horn go off and Kevin Nash came out with basically painted on black hair, the black gloves, in the Big Daddy Cool gear with the tassels on the leg and the whole nine yards, I immediately flashed back to being a kid. And you heard it on from Matt Stryker saying, I'm marking out, bro. Matt Stryker going back to being a 12-year-old kid or however old he was going in, sitting there at ringside. The place absolutely erupted. People in the ring just stopped and stared at Diesel coming back to the ring. So I think for a lot of people who were younger during that time and a lot of people who were watching really did jump in surprise at the fact that not only was Kevin Nash returning to the Royal Rumble, but Diesel was making an appearance and coming down to the ring as a seven-footer and getting into the ring with a lot of people who you never would have thought he would be in the ring with. So that's why he's my number two on the biggest surprises for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about that is after his music hits, the camera was just in the perfect position to catch Kofi Kingston, who just has this absolutely shocked look on his face. It's funny to watch when you just see him kind of big eyes and bugging out, saying, oh, my God, here comes Diesel coming back. Like you said, it was rumored beforehand. I guess the fact that he came out, like you said, as Diesel instead of Kevin Nash kind of did change it a little bit, especially considering most people, just you said, assumed he would come back as Kevin Nash. So it was kind of, like you said, a nice little taking it back to the childhood moment where hearing the horror and then the rest of the music playing. So, no, I agree with this one. I like where it is up there. It would have been one of my honorable mentions on my list. So, yeah, I agree with this one.
Good. We have an agreement. With that, let me. I will throw out my number one. That since we're, I've been throwing at you this entire time, so I'll throw out my number one. I'm going back and forth on this one. I'm not really sure who to pick, but I have to go with what my gut feeling was and the first one that popped into my mind, and that was Johnson. Going back,
I hate you.
So we have a dual number one. Okay, well you have to come out with somebody new.
Okay.
John Cena returning in 2008. It was absolutely amazing in the Madison Square Garden Arena. It was something that nobody expected. It was a return that made Madison Square Garden pop. And not only did they pop, but they popped for John Cena, which they were in an arena that probably should have booed the crap out of him. But he came back, I think, at least 6 months early from a pectoral injury that sidelined him at least 6 months longer. He came back completely out of the blue. There were no rumors of him returning. Nobody expected him to come. Everybody thought from where he what or where the Royal Rumble was and what the plans were for WrestleMania and how it was shaping up. It was Triple H going through. It was him going into to WrestleMania 24, or one of the WrestleManias.
Yeah, 24.
It was all Triple H. That's what we were looking at. And at number 30, John Cena makes his return, comes out to a fantastic ovation, and nonetheless, staring down Triple H, the man everybody thought was going to win the Rumble, and then goes on to win the Royal Rumble, his first Royal Rumble win, and then go on to WrestleMania. So this entry and this choice, I think, surpasses everyone simply because he was such a big name and was kept under such tight wraps, and the fact that he came back so early from an injury that really was hard to come back early from. I mean, he couldn't move his arm. I mean, he couldn't lift his arm above his weight for the most part. So for him to make it back this soon was incredible. And the way that they were able to pull it off and the fact that he kept it quiet from everybody in a day and age where everything is made public, there are no secrets, it's absolutely unbelievable. It's only done, it's been really done one other time in this modern era of wrestling. But this was the one where it was number 30. It was a main event player, and he went on to win and then headline WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, you pretty much stated the reasons. I'll pick a different one to talk about, but that was pretty much the reasons why that would have been my number one if I would have went first. I mean, I remember watching that Rumble with my friends and making an offhand comment about, like, I think around number 22 or somewhere in the 20s, I said something along the lines, that would be pretty funny if John Cena came back from injury early and came back and won. And then, sure enough, it ended up happening. But I agree with everything you said. Like, in this day and age, it is very tough in the wrestling world to keep secrets and not have it leak out in some form, especially when it's something as big as that, where he's the actual winner of the Royal Rumble, and that has somehow did not leak out at all from any wrestler involved, any higher up, you know, anybody that was involved in booking that. It was, like you said, Madison Square Garden is typically a crowd that would have booed John Cena, and like you said, they were cheering him. My friends and I, who don't really like John Cena, were even had to give applause to that, saying, you know what, you may not like him, but that was pretty well done, the way they kind of did that return and kept everything quiet. So everything about that whole return was just as perfect as you could possibly make it. And like you said, everybody pretty much just assumed it was a given going in that Triple H is going to win that match. And then here comes, like, Cena back from injury way too early, considering what you thought, what many people thought he had, which I believe was like a torn tendon, like he said, in his arm. And then it was kind of screwed up afterward where he wanted not to wait to WrestleMania and then fought Orton at, I think it was No Way Out or Elimination Chamber, or whatever it was called at that point. And then it ended up being a triple threat match at WrestleMania. But like you said, the actual moment of him coming back was just such a great surprise that I don't think anything tops it really in Royal Rumble history as far as surprise returns go.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to say. And it's funny that John Cena. It's funny that it's somebody that so many people love to hate. And he was the one, I mean, it was damn impressive when he came back that early from injury. And I think put a wrench in a lot of naysayers' ideals of him being a top guy. Because, I mean, it's unbelievable what this man can do. And the fact that he was able to do that as well is just, it's mind-boggling. Let's get your number one.
All right, so I guess this would be my 1B, I guess. I'm flipping back and forth here between two different ones. And you know what? I'm going to go with, I guess, my 1B, and maybe I'll bring up the 1C. My 1B will be Chris Jericho's return in 2013, simply because, again, it was a situation where there were Jericho was, I guess, around with Fozzy, but he never really said that he was coming back. And Jericho, of course, being the social media trickster that he is basically saying he wasn't around anymore and was throwing out these red herrings, saying he was somewhere else. And then sure enough, Jericho made a surprise return in the 2013 Royal Rumble. He had, against Dolph Ziggler, I believe he had just finished his feud with Ziggler earlier in the summer or fall. I believe there was a match on Raw where he had to leave, and then he came back here at the Royal Rumble to a, it's kind of, Ziggler came out at number one, and there was like a dramatic wait for number two, and Jericho then came out, and it was a surprise Jericho return, unlike his other returns that had come recently where he kind of did these promo videos and it started to leak that it was Jericho. Nobody really knew that it was Jericho was going to come back here and fight at the Royal Rumble. So that'll be my 1B pick for Jericho coming back in 2013. The other one that I was flipping back and forth with would have been Edge in 2010, coming back from his torn Achilles injury kind of early, eight or nine months. That is kind of early for a torn Achilles tendon. He came back, he won the Royal Rumble, ended up going on to fight Chris Jericho at that Royal Rumble for the world title. But I don't think, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't think there were any rumors that Edge was coming back at that point. But it was a nicely done kind of setup. I kind of remember the camera panning towards Chris Jericho when he came out, and Jericho had been mocking Edge kind of the last, after Edge had gotten injured, saying how, you know, Edge wasn't that great of a partner and how he was the better of the two. And it kind of just naturally set up him eliminating Jericho from Rumble and then setting up a world title match between those two at that year's WrestleMania. But my 1B definite pick will be Chris Jericho in 2013.
The one thing about Edge was, one, it was rumored that he might fight Jericho for the world title, but they didn't know when he would come back. They thought maybe Elimination Chamber, maybe he'd make it back, like, right before. So they didn't know if he'd make it back in time for, well, nobody really thought he didn't make it back in time for the Royal Rumble. The thing that kind of tipped it, and I remember saying that Edge was going to come out and win this Rumble. I think I made a prediction for that Royal Rumble and said that Edge was going to win it, even though he wasn't announced that he was on the show by that time. Chris Jericho had been saying and had been teasing more and more towards Edge and saying that he was a crappy title champion and he was a crappy friend. And he wasn't even the tag team champion at that time, where he had a tag team run with Big Show when Edge went down with the injury, but they had since lost the titles to DX, and he was still cutting promos about Edge, saying that he was weak, he was injury prone, and he wasn't as good of a champion as I was, and Jericho didn't have a feud at that time, so this was the only thing he was talking about. That's what kind of led me to think that Edge was coming back for the Royal Rumble and eliminating Jericho. I don't know if a lot of other people had that in their mind. That's why I don't really consider him a surprise entry. He is, and it was played off as being surprised, but it was kind of a lukewarm surprise for me just because all the signs pointed to him being in the Royal Rumble. Jericho returning in 2013 was mind-boggling for everybody. He was having the time of his life, not only for that Rumble, but for almost everything. Him returning, he was just messing with people. He was saying constantly that, oh, I'm in this city, maybe I'll be at Raw. Or, oh, I'm going to be here, maybe I'll be at WrestleMania, or maybe I'll be at Payback. I remember this one time he was saying he was in Chicago, so maybe he'll be at that pay-per-view, and he wasn't. So he has the time of his life just trolling internet fans. And it's well documented. He admits to it fully. He even writes about it in this book. So him being able to pull off this surprise is commendable. And reading about how he did it in his book is awesome. I mean, hiding in the production truck the entire time, checking Twitter and checking Instagram and checking Facebook, checking news sites all over, like all day, wondering if his surprise has been spoiled, was amazing. And for him to be able to walk into not only the arena, but walk into a talent meeting where they went over what was going to happen at the Royal Rumble, and nobody that was in that talent meeting reporting that he was coming back at number one, or number two, I mean, and lasting so long into the match, I think it's commendable. Like, nobody in that match spoiled the fact that Jericho was going to be returning. That's fun. That's wrestling at its most fun. Being able to be surprised, not knowing what's coming next, and enjoying it, having it be a good payoff, and not being lukewarm or it being disappointing or whatever it may be. That was a fun return. That was a thing that a lot of people not only enjoyed, but a lot of people just didn't expect. I mean, it didn't have any big ramifications as far as going forward. It didn't have any big WrestleMania plans behind it. It was just somebody who was really well-liked, popular with the fans, and came back to have fun, and came back that night and hid as much as he could and tried not to talk to people, simply because he wanted to surprise the fans. And that's fun in wrestling. And I give him a lot of credit for that one. That was one of the best moments in wrestling history. Especially modern day wrestling.
Yeah, and like you said, especially with him like hiding out the whole time, and even last year's Royal Rumble, he was in the city again and didn't show up. I remember him walking into the autograph signing, which I went to in Pittsburgh. And the very first thing, before he sat down, somebody shouted out from inside the line, "So you're going to be in the Rumble, right?" And he replied without just very quick, not even thinking. He's like, "Yeah, I'm going to be the 31st entrant." Everybody just laughed. But it's just a classic example of Jericho kind of being a troll, like you said, the internet, Twitter, Facebook, message board people, and this time actually getting them very good and coming back without pretty much anybody knowing. Very, very well done.
I mean, you could always go with Jericho for some of the best moments in wrestling, especially in the modern era, but this was one where it's a pay-per-view where a lot of people watch, and for the pay-per-view, a lot of people rewatch over and over again because of the Royal Rumble and the appeal, not only for hardcore fans, but casual fans like seeing all the action and seeing a fast-paced match and things of that nature. And it's a match that a lot of people go back to almost every year because they want to relive stuff like that. And he gave us a moment that really is one that you like to go back and watch because you like to go back and see the reaction of the crowd, the reaction of the announcers and Ziggler in the ring and everything that surrounded it. So it's a fun moment, and it's one that I think a lot of people remember for forever. As long as people like pro wrestling, I think that's going to be one that they remember and one that they go back to a lot. Then those are our top three. I will say that Cam's one and two were mixed in there somewhere. I will post them with the podcast when I post the podcast up at hdcwrestling.com. You'll be able to read what his top two were if you care. So, we understand. But that being said, I need to go because I need to get ready not only for Raw, which will be on my screen somewhere, but also the Ohio State National Championship game. I am a Buckeye fan. We are in the first national championship game in college football history. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I have no idea if we're going to win or not. Oregon is a hugely, hugely tough opponent. So that's going to be interesting. I'm excited. This is one of those few times in sports where I'm really excited, especially since I'm a Mets fan. But I'm really excited for this game tonight. So if I'm slow getting my Raw review up and things of that nature, this is why. Look for Justin's report. I'm sure Justin will get there real quick. He's a Buffalo fan, so they're not going to be looking at any sort of championship game for a while now. So, yeah, he should be on the ball with everything. That being said, anything you want to add, Justin, as far as Raw, as far as Royal Rumble, anything you want to throw out there?
I just hope we see something that is better than last week's show, where it's kind of, it just seemed like it hit a reset button, but it hit a reset button back to last year, which people were kind of fed up with already. So hopefully something happens tonight where we get a little bit more interest going forward, but I just don't see that happening at all.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Hopefully, like you said, hopefully something starts kicking it into high gear, because now it's kind of slowly plodding its way to death. But like we always say on the show, we want to be excited. We want to have fun. We want to like pro wrestling. We want to like the WWE. Give us something to like. So that being said, I am Matt Harris with Justin Chiwanka. Join us again next week. We will be having our preview show for the Royal Rumble. To that, I will be headed to the Royal Rumble, where you will see live updates from me on hdcwrestling.com and at Matt Herrick on Twitter. It's MATTHARRAK. You can also find a link to my Twitter page on hdcwrestling.com. But until next week, read us on hdcwrestling.com. Read us at insidepulse.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Contact us on Twitter or at thewrestlingpulsecast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to give away free gifts. We'd love to be able to do whatever you guys want us to do. We love feedback. Until next week, I'm Blog Talk Radio. I'm Matt Herrick. See you then.